Okay, this is the Vanguard Academy Board Meeting for Tuesday, March.
Did it say March? I thought it changed.
April 3rd.
Or sorry.
Yeah, that's right.
April 3rd, sorry. April 3rd, 2018. We'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And we'll start with the, go ahead and start with the roll call. This is Kent Johnson, Board Chair.
Scott Kingston, Board Member.
Eric Freeman, Board Member.
Tony Jenkins, Board Counselor.
Darren Jenkins, Board Member.
Troy Palmer, Curriculum Director.
Ken Mangum, Board Member.
Grace Mitchell, Treasurer.
David Kingston, Vice Chair.
Suzanne Owen, Director.
Kathleen Kingston, Assistant Director.
Stephanie Evans, Minute Taker.
Marie Evans, Operations Manager.
Okay, good. The next item is public comment. If there's any public comment, we'll give time for that now, up to 3 minutes per person. There's no public comment. We'll move on to the next. go through the minutes. Everyone has a copy of the minutes, I think. So if you need a copy, we can give you a copy. Anybody else need a copy?
I move to approve the minutes from last week.
I'll second.
So, all in favor of approving minutes from last meeting, say yes?
Yes.
Yes.
All opposed, say no. So the minutes have been approved. We'll go on to our open points. The first open point is a continual open point, which is how are we going to include excellence in everything we do? Is there anything anyone would like to say? To that for this past while. The one thing that stood out to me was we sent our English students to that competition, and I think anything we can do to put our children in a situation where they can compete and excel or have a chance to see where they sit is a very good opportunity to for excellence. It sounds like we did pretty good. Mm-hmm. I don't know how the scale was.
He said Vanguard kind of swept the competition. We have 8 teams going on to compete at the state level. So
I did look at the number of results because those were emailed to me too, and there were about 3 times as many applicants as what we won. So in the category, each category that we had, there's at least 2 teams that they beat out to go and take that top place.
Yeah.
So.
Are we somehow monitoring excellence with this chart out in the hallway? I see teachers' names with scores on it. I don't know what it's for, but we must be monitoring something.
They just started that. I was just remembering that they have been recognizing students. Dorothy Thomas and some of the student government and different students, they have little tickets that other students can recognize the student for. Positive behavior, different areas, obedience, or doing something to help someone else. So they have started something that way to try to promote people looking for good behavior and tracking it on that board.
I'd make a recommendation to put a title on it so people know what it's for.
Very good idea.
Yeah, we need to let teachers know how they earn them, too. I don't
Yeah, they just get a survey start up, so.
That's good.
Anything else on that first side? Do we have any more data? Do we still want to keep the item open about exits in the school?
I think so.
It's going to be a concern as enrollment increases. Do we have numbers from our assemblies and stuff?
Because we split the assemblies, then we didn't ever hit the max because we did the music separately, the choir or the orchestras separate from the choirs. So we didn't have an overall large audience like we would have if we had combined it.
Will there be one this spring where everyone's together?
There will be this spring.
So we would be able to count that way.
So maybe we can make an account on that and then add it into the open point. That's okay.
How do we know if we've completed that open point number two?
As soon as Kim is satisfied. With the comfort level, signing off for that. Or, I guess, as a board, if we feel like that's.
That's correct. We feel like the risk is.
So, if you feel like, then maybe we can get some numbers, and that number will tell us. And then have an engineer decide, calculate if that's appropriate. The next item is STEM designation. That's probably pushed to next year. So
do we want to close it or keep it open?
Why don't we? Joy's not in here. Should we?
I know she's having
We're working
the
on
school
it.
Work
We're
on
still,
stuff.
Should we leave it open? Then?
Let's leave it open until we actually get it.
Okay. Let's leave it open.
Yeah.
Okay. Follow up with teachers that haven't completed their 180-day plans. Is that still a concern?
That's a joy thing, too.
That's a joy thing when she comes back. We'll ask her about it. And include our absence report on the top summary. We're still working on that with Rebecca. Is that?
I think that there was at least one report with absences.
Yeah, we do have the absence in there, but we probably ought to request a report with just absences. Attendance rate, so we have that specifically if that's going to be an open point.
So focus there.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so we'll leave that open. Rebecca's actually made progress on reports.
Sounds like Joni might have something on the absences.
Okay.
I actually don't have the absences in there because I've got to get those from Rebecca, but I've printed just kind of an outline of a couple of reports. I just want to get a clarification of exactly what you want to see. And based on these, if we have some sentences in these, I wondered if we do a similar one for studies. So if you want to just look at these and just give me some feedback on it. Whether or not this is the format of something you want to see. So some of the comments made were that we wanted to see it compared month to month, and then also year to year. We don't really have the data from last year, but if you get this report, then in future years we could do it. Anyway, you can back on that as far as you would want that to see. So when we do have the data in there, it'll pull the way you want it.
So is this just a template of what we want it to look like?
Yeah.
No data. Is this something we can give it to produce it right out of our school?
It would feed into a bucket and then. It doesn't come straight from our school, but she has it where, and I don't know the database, I don't really understand it real well, but they just dump into a database and then use this Excel.
Couldn't you just produce the report question?
That was something Beth would have to answer.
I wonder if we're going to ask her if that's possible.
I think she probably could. Some of the questions she was asked, she mentioned to me is one, how much is it going to cost for her to figure out how to do it for the amount of time? And then the other one, and I think there are things that maybe she's wanting, but not quite there yet.
And then the other thing that she had mentioned to me was that wondered if it was even worth having them create it. And she needed to get a cost analysis on it to determine that answer.
So it should.
There, it should, but the, on the periods, if we're looking at, and I think it's probably okay because that will just give us a general idea. I wonder if we also need to add A day, B day, because sometimes it's, yeah. So you might have a kid who never goes to his third period on B day because, well, doesn't like that class versus whatever. And I don't know if it's necessary because the period 1 through 4 should give us enough of that data to kind of see, is the kid here all day, regardless of whether it's an A or B day, but possibly add that to it.
Another thing that might be useful is the number of days possible, so regardless of how long, okay? Maybe we can look for a little number of school days on there.
Yeah, I agree.
So we'll, as soon as we see it in a top summary, we'll check it out. Okay. The next item is we need to see the assessment and matching by grade. And I.
That's the most reflective of that. Okay.
So that's, we're in the progress with that as well. Mm-hmm. Is that okay? Is that open? The next item opened up here, Kingston, is incorporate the new academic freedom policy with the old policy. And send that out a week before the board meeting.
I did invite him, but you just really asked today whether is that what we wanted on the, there was a question on the master plan.
That was on a report itself,
okay.
Not the grading policy.
I was going to ask about that after the I do have that combined, and I did not send it out for this meeting. I
forgot. Yeah, I was just busy this time. Well, so maybe my next board meeting.
I will just send it to Stephanie now.
Okay, and the next one, as well, let's go through the board preparation checklist to make sure it follows code.
So on our website, it does tell that if they are wanting the minutes, it tells them where to go to, and it tells them who to contact. I think we do need to add on there that, or the date we're having the board meeting, that it's going to be every Thursday.
Yeah, don't. We should be able to schedule that and have that out.
Every
Tuesday. We've made a change this time, but
yeah, but as a general rule, I think the main thing is that we have our yearly meeting calendar, and if we have to make changes, then we would just update it on the web page.
I think the requirement's just 24 hours notice, though, isn't it? We're meeting that.
Yeah, we're meeting that. We put that on the state website every at least 24 hours in advance.
Okay, so. Do we want to leave it open, or is that?
I think the idea when we opened this was that we would make sure we're in compliance, not just with the website, but with all of the meeting minute requirements and everything. So was there anyone looking at things besides the website to make sure we're in compliance?
Yeah, we were looking at, so there are certain things you got to have in the minutes, and even just to prepare for it. And our checklist does have the items necessary to have it in compliance.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a post-meeting checklist as far as uploading the minutes or the meeting recording to a certain place?
I can look over that part again and verify that we have that part in compliance.
Yeah. I thought we had that, but I guess we need to just verify that. Then that's happening.
Yeah.
Could we bring that checklist to the next board meeting?
Yeah.
And then we can at least review it and make sure, and even show a filled out one.
Okay.
Who made the checklist?
Troy did.
Okay.
So when I originally made it, then I looked at the state rule time, and that's how I made the checklist.
Okay, good.
So I might just want to verify with the state or board rule again.
Yeah.
To make sure, in case there's been any changes.
As long as it was made by someone who was looking up the law.
Yeah, if I don't do that.
Okay. And so I want to try to get that and email it to everybody and then and just review if there's
you
any.
You guys did review it already when we had the training on it earlier this year?
So we've so already looked at it.
You've looked at the board rule. You didn't compare it with the checklist, though. So
okay,
if that's what you want, that could count as a training for this year.
And that's probably appropriate. Just a review and make sure that's accurate or
okay.
Complete.
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay, so maybe by next time we can have that be an exercise.
Open once more.
We're not closing any of these.
One more time on that one.
See what the requirements are to be able to get credit for work release. How's
So we actually looked into it. There's two packets I'm passing around. This one here is the workplace skills, and the state office has a workplace learning program. And originally I was thinking that we didn't really qualify for it. The very back page has a endorsement or an application for it. And based on 1 and 2, then Catherine Johnson and myself qualify to go to offer this workplace program. So this has just a short description of what it's required. And a lot of the strands in here, a lot of the standards in this are actually things that we teach in our career orientation class. And so one of the requirements that we thought we would have as a student in order to be able to do the work, workplace skills would have, in the future, would have to be required to have taken it, completed the career orientation class, which is a great class. In the other packet here, I have just a packet of the work study program. And I think it's to the point where we could implement this after being reviewed. But I feel like it's to the point where we could actually implement it this year and be able to receive funding for our students for this year's work release program. But anyone that, in order to get funding for it, they would have to complete an agreement completed, filled out by their supervisor on their job. And then also there's a some checklists and things that the last page, the front of the last page, this one is just a sample list, and this information, we have a lot of information like this for different jobs. This one, if you notice at the top, it's specific for a teacher assistant. What we would do is work with some of our business partners to create checklists specific to what they want. We do have several sample checklists that we can begin with and then update as needed.
Yeah, I think it would be nice to have that started this year.
And how you wonder if we'd start it
for if that's possible.
3 years. Anyway, we're already here, so. I'm not sure. These kids worked on this. I don't know if we could go in past quarters or not. Where they, I mean, they've been working throughout the paperwork or.
I think the main thing would be if the employers have enough data that they could provide input on that.
What are the requirements for the employer to comply with the program?
I think they're just required to provide, provide just a checkup, in essence, a report card.
The biggest thing when I talked to the state office is they said that you have to make sure you look into it and that you're not sending your students out to work in areas where they're not safe. That if you do provide this program, it is your responsibility that the students are safe and in a safe environment.
So it looks like we've probably completed the checklist. Oh, the item other than you want to open ones to say have we incorporated it for this. It would be nice to have.
I think so.
I think if we left it on there and maybe modified it to say
incorporated.
Yeah, for this information. Next item is have the director's reporting for the summary from the observations in the top 10. And
I don't think we've done that.
I think we're almost there.
Yeah.
So we'll leave that one open. We want a procedure for following the absentee policy. If it needs to identify the person who will do it, the procedure to get it done, and it needs to be ready to go by the fourth quarter.
So we've analyzed that just briefly. I believe that it's something that, you know, the procedure needs to be clearly defined. The policy is in place. We just need to clearly define the procedure to follow policy. Mm-hmm. And in past years, then I have done that, and we've just done, you know, up to the certain number. With our policy, it says after two absences, then the third absence then starts resulting in a referral to the office, and then subsequent contact of parent and possible detentions or fines or whatever the applicable thing is. And so in past years, I've done that, and I've used the secretary in the office to send parent notices home. We have held Saturday school last year. So I think that I need to move that back over to the directorship rather than what we were terming student services. So that is something that we're going to move forward with, whether it's Kathleen or myself or a combination of both. Most likely Kathleen would be the one heading that up, but it may be that I would get it started and then kind of transfer that over to make sure we have all those. I did have the form letters and everything, so I'm just going to try to unearth what I've done in the past and then put it into place this year. Mm-hmm. To follow policy. Okay. So, work in progress, not in place yet.
Okay, we'll just check on that next time. Next meeting, the last item is decide if we want the ACT prep course to be a required course. Have we looked into that at all?
We have talked briefly about other things. I don't think that's been on our list of considerations.
It's probably more for next year. Is this year?
Yeah, well, and we did have it as an elective. I think the question was, should we require all of the 11th grade students to take it? Mm-hmm. And I don't know. And maybe it would be something that we would have to decide, you know, on the curricular level. Mm-hmm. If we did make it a required course, we would have to have an adequate curriculum put into place. We'd have to have adequate training for those who are going to instruct it. That is, we've got some things, and we did run it as an elective course. Feedback I got was that they didn't feel like it was super helpful. They did get a little extra time to practice the process, but a lot of it is really we kind of threw it at teachers and said, here, teach this, please.
So we need to get a little bit better prepared.
Mm-hmm. And unless we're willing to commit the time and effort and funding to making it a required course, and if we are, then, you know, if that's the right thing to do, we ought to do it. But I don't think it's a one-man decision. I think it really needs to be something that's really fleshed out and make sure we've got the right curriculum, the right instruction, and that we really set aside some time to do it. In many of our 11th grade student schedules, it just didn't fit. Because they're taking college courses.
Okay, so we need to do some more analysis on that.
Yeah.
So are the last two open points still open?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Did you already do mine
while
I'm out of the room?
Oh, yeah, we did. We need to go back to you, sorry. So, 188 plans, huh?
Yep, I did follow up, and on the board meeting where I wasn't here, I sent the summary out to everybody. So that should be able to be closed, I think. Because it just says to follow up with every teacher.
So every teacher's going to
So if you wanted to leave it open until every single teacher is done, for me done, means it's at the level of people who've gotten bonus. So there's some that I've been working with, and they're just...
Isn't the intent that we want to know if there's any teachers that still haven't?
Yeah.
There's not any teacher who has nothing, but there's still teachers who...
Haven't completed it?
Haven't completed it, or like it says, project for a whole month, not tied to any standards. There you go. If it's not done, I mean... Like, I know of one teacher that we hired last minute, and then it got put into a class just mid-semester, and he's doing it as he goes, but he is doing it, and he does have a plan to achieve all standards. But if you, like, when I say done, it's got to be done.
All the way, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't give it the stamp unless it's really done.
So how do we...
So if you want it to stay open until they're all done, that's fine, but...
Well... What's the goal? What do we want
to? Three, buy into the process, which I think we've been getting because I haven't had anybody who's just said no. And then I'll go over the statistics of completion on that when I get to my stuff. But for anybody that I've talked to that's in that situation, then they have said they will be in a better position to do it for next year, and they want it. And I wanted it at the beginning of this year, obviously, but it's not something that they're just dismissing and tossing out. It's something that they're working towards doing better at.
If I closed this, I would want to see possibly in the top summary of the management reporting app that shows the percentage complete, so you can at least see.
Is it in the app right now, the management reporting packet?
I haven't seen one.
Yeah, we don't close it.
That's one of
my...
We can't close it until we have it somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think you could close it until
you... So we should put in this position that can be closed once it's in the... So that we know. So we
know. At least we have visibility that that's still...
Yeah.
And then you can tell us if that's an issue.
Yeah.
I think that's...
Or we can decide if that's an issue, I guess. Because there's exceptions, obviously.
Yeah.
But if it was a teacher that... didn't create one, they had complete time.
They should have completed it.
They should have completed it, then it would be an issue.
That's what we want to know, not whether a teacher that just started hasn't done it.
There's going to have new teachers and new classes, but as a general, should be very established.
Can you have on the top summary kind of a description of why the who hasn't completed? Maybe that would be appropriate in the top summary. It's just a list of people that, or classes or teachers that haven't completed that. Maybe.
Yeah. And I assert on my summary that I gave to you guys, there is like one or two, some with the college and career classes that we were unsure if they were going to be taught or not.
Yeah.
And so, but I can just list, add to the top summary and get them and why.
Okay. The other one you had was to come up with a recommendation. December designation is still going for next year at this point.
Yeah, that one I wondered if we could close it because you guys voted in the board meeting that we will seek the designation, and then we've already started the process. So,
do we still want to know when it happens? Or
does it say? I can, I've got it on my.
Okay. So, if you'll keep us in the loop, what do you think?
Well, yeah, this one asks for us to come up with a recommendation if we're going to apply to be a STEM designated school.
Okay. So
I think that one's okay to close.
Yeah, let's go ahead and close it. Okay, we've got to go and close.
I know.
Okay, well, I think that's it for the open items. We'll move on to the next. And the director's report.
Okay, and I'm just going to kind of piggyback off of some of the things that were in the minutes last time. We are still over-enrolled. We are going to schedule the lottery draw. We are in a lottery situation, so we're going to schedule that lottery draw. We do need to give 1 week's notice. I think it's 5 business days notice to all parents of students who are in that lottery. So we'll be sending that notice out shortly and plan the lottery draw within the next 2 weeks. Just want to make sure that the board is aware, and the lottery does need to include a founding board member in the lottery process.
So how, potentially, how many students will be dropped off?
Well,
and they'll be put on wait list. And from the looks of it, then there will be about 20 kids on the wait list. Depending on the number of students who actually graduate and the spots that are open. And that's one reason we didn't do the lottery draw yet. But, you know, again, they get put on a wait list rather than just dropped. But because we still have had a few decisions being made on the graduation process. So we're just working toward that. And
it seems like every year there's kids that drop right when school, or you find out.
Yeah, and that's entirely possible. They may have changed their plans, and so then a couple more spots open up, and we go to the top names on the wait list. So we will be holding that right around April 15th, and I will let the board know the date that we decide to do it. And it is open and public, especially for the parents and any board members that want to be there. I think if there's a quorum, though, then it's a board meeting. But anyway, we'll be holding that. And I think the main other thing is to go through the Exhibit A, but that's a little later on the thing, Exhibit A and bell schedule and calendar. So I can either go over that now, or I can just say call it that, and then we move on to the finance report, unless there's anything else that you're wanting to know what's going on around here, then I can update you on that.
Anything come of that property?
I haven't heard back from anyone on it. So I probably should follow through and see if they have any, if anybody has any thoughts that way.
But do you know if it's still available?
I don't know. The last message I got was an email from the property owner mentioning that he was willing to sell. So.
Did we make that an open point?
We did last time.
Do they know we're interested?
Yes, that's why. It was actually a couple of years ago that Mr. Omer actually contacted the owner. He wasn't ready to sell at that point in time. He did mention then, at that time, that Endeavor Hall had also expressed an interest in the property. And so he just emailed and said that it looked like that his plans were changed. Anyway, there was something to do with
taxes.
Yeah.
So do you want to add that as an open point?
To look into the
property next door.
And who's that going to be for?
Probably me.
Okay.
If there's nothing else on the director's report, we'll go to the finance.
Okay. Kathleen, are you ready for that one?
What's the 700 property?
700 is typically technology and furniture fixtures.
Are we waiting for Rick to show that? Or?
Let's see. One of the things that we were looking at was we had been testing it out and I didn't get a response. I was on maternity leave and I did reach out to the teachers that were using it. Our audio enhancement, we had been testing that in some of the classrooms. So that is something that we were looking at purchasing with the trust line funds. We used part of the funds to pay for the new science curriculum, and we still had some available that we were looking at using for audio enhancement, and we had been demoing a system in a couple different classes to see, and they've actually just contacted me this last week asking where we have where we are on that and whether we've made a decision. I haven't gotten the feedback from the teachers who'd been using it to meet with Suzanne yet. So that was something that we were looking at that would be a substantial purchase that has not happened that we had originally planned on.
How much of a substantial purchase?
It was going to be around $10,000 to $15,000. So it's still under budget from where we thought we would be. But other than that, I think we have got everything up to date. I can check to see. I guess we don't have the new IVC room. I haven't, that expense has not been reported. I can see what that amount.
Would those purchases you mentioned go in 300 or 700?
They would go in the 700 because they are equipment. So there's.
Are there other purchases that we're waiting on that are not in these numbers?
Right now.
So we don't have anything in the pipeline for like lighting or any other property improvements?
Those would go into the 400 and we could just reallocate funds because some of the, when we did go one-to-one on the Chromebooks, mm-hmm. the pricing that we got worked out to be really good and the volume of the cases and things that we got with them were less than we thought they were going to be.
So do we have a list of expenditures that we are looking at in the future, near future?
I can put one together. I don't have one currently.
Okay, let's do that.
And how come we're over on our revenue for the...
on which one?
On 3,000 state funds. We projected 1.7, we're at 2.1. Is that just a timing thing, or is that?
Sometimes they change.
Could be after the October 1 count, because I understand that they start the funding at a little under what our projected enrollment is, just to make sure they're not overpaying schools, and then they October 1 they true up the numbers, and so beginning in November, December, then they start paying out the difference. So they increased that.
There was also, I mentioned it the last time, that I didn't know how to project. I didn't have the information available at that point on the concurrent enrollment, what funding and how that calculation was, and they didn't have spent that, and it is higher than what I did anticipate. So that was another area that was higher because of the number of students that we do have taking classes and completing them.
Yeah.
Then that was a lot larger amount than originally planned on.
Okay. So that's a real number then?
We have been tracking at about that percentage just the last couple months because it's just, that's where it is coming.
So would it make sense on this budget to kind of do the rest of the year forecast on actual expenses? So, for example, if you know what your wages are going to be through the end of the year, give us what you really expect to spend in each category.
Okay.
Because looks like there's some funds available to do some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what we're after, and the list of stuff that we're thinking we may want to allocate those funds to.
And then on the trust left for next year. We just finished reviewing the plan with the committee. Next year's trust funds will be just over $44,000, and the committee is planning on using the funds for the additional science. The science curriculum we're using has consumable books or supplies that are consumable, so we're going to use part of that to cover those science supplies in that area, and then the other part was to use towards the coaching and mentoring. It is an approved expenditure for that, for those areas for science and math that we can cover salary of in that area.
Okay. So if you could get us, outline us those things, and then even look and see what is available in those areas, so we can see what's available to us so we can use the funds on. This would ever make sense for the school.
Mm-hmm. Anything else on the finance?
Hey, Kathleen, will you also add, when you say actual year to date, does that mean you went to all the way to February 18th?
No, that's February 2018. I tried typing it in Excel, kept changing it back, and I didn't go find out how to make it change the format.
That's okay, but we know that it
February,
is to the end of February.
End of February.
Okay. Okay, the next item is the governance committee. We'll do a quick update. We've been focusing on some reports from Rebecca Lucas, and we've got some pretty good reports now for the director and the operations manager to look at to evaluate the teachers. It looks like there's still some problem issues, areas. Overall, the grades look like they're doing better. and as we get to assessment, we can see if that's how real they are, some of them anyway, the ones we can track. We're still working with the data as far as our teachers, one-on-ones, and some, and we're thinking that we've been making some progress on it because the grades are going up.
So is that what you've noticed?
Yeah, and I think the accountability piece, just that the fact that the teachers are feeling accountable, and I think that it is helping.
And I think in general, if people know they're being measured, then they perform better. And so I think that's part of the idea.
Yeah.
With accountability. if anybody's interested in any reports, Suzanne has copies of them. But that's probably for governance. We'll go next to the academic assessment committee report. So it's Joy, Marie, and John.
All right, here's a few things I'm gonna add for real quick. I did want to, with our culture of celebrating success, and I might not be here anywhere in the committees for the rest of the year, but for the rest of the school year. Yeah. I did want to celebrate the curriculum successes from this year. And the first few things are the processes that we've gone through. One of the biggest benefits that we've had with curriculum is the use of the curriculum preparation packet. And we hear a lot more about 180-day plans than we do about the entire process. But this is the process that was developed as we selected our new math curriculum towards the end of year one. And through using this process, then we were able to select the best curriculum and then implement that curriculum in a way that helped our students to master it. So as you'll notice through the process, there's more than just 180-day plan, but the 180-day plan is definitely one of the biggest chunks of it. Section 2 is just information that the school issues so that the teacher can create their curriculum. But really, once we're at the secondary level, then teachers have to create their own curriculum. We can't hire one person to create curriculum for every single class that we teach. Instead, we hire people who are highly qualified and they create their curriculums. And we purchase curriculums and give them to teachers, but there is not a single purchased curriculum in our school that comes to us packaged in this way. And so we received some help in creating this process in that first year. And we've seen a lot of success with anybody who has used it. The more they use it, the better they get at it. It just, like we were discussing, you know, some of our language arts, those classes that are doing best with that this year did very best on the 180-day plan. And anyone can review it a little more on their own time. If you have questions, let me know. But I am really excited to share some of the results with that, which I will.
The question I have is, would you, instead of focusing on just one element of this process, would you, should be in a minute, should we focus on the packet?
That's a question, and I actually, in my top summary, what I could do, so Grace had asked me, she's over the curriculum committee, and so she had asked me to separate my summary out by steps in this, and so I have. So in the top summary, you could actually get a percentage complete each step of the packet if you wanted. So you could see percent of 180 plans done, percent of disclosures that are complete. You could have that as one number. Okay. That's what I was envisioning, and Rebecca Lucas is awesome as far as helping us get our management reporting report set up, and that's what I put on my top summary, what I'll be putting into that. So our textbook selection process is similar to this, but this is what, this one that you have is the one that we use after the textbook is already selected. But our textbook selection process goes through, they basically have to create a 180-day plan in order to buy the textbook to show that, yes, it will meet all standards, and then they have to compare it to other curriculums and make sure we're getting the best one and find like results from other schools that are using it and things like that. So that process has been helpful with anything that it's been used on, then it's been very helpful. We also have our elective selection process, which is very extensive, and this year we decided to use our results from last year because it is very extensive, and we feel like doing every other year would suffice to help us determine what electives we wanted. Also, STEM observations is a new thing, and there's a sheet in the back, the very last sheet, I guess, if you want to look at that. It's just part of the training that I've attended this year through our STEM Academy has STEM-specific observations to how, so that when you go into a classroom, you can look for things that aren't maybe the typical things you'll find on evaluation, but they list all of the practices that you should see in a class. So when you walk into a classroom, what should you see? So that's a process that is just barely starting off. It's not refined like the other three. We've had some really good staff trainings as far as curriculum this year. So our best one was definitely the professional learning communities and unpacking standards. Using the Freyer model, we brought in someone from Washington County School District. I had heard someone else from Washington County School District at one of the STEM academies that I attended. They did an amazing presentation. And so we asked them to come. They spent a day with our teachers, helping them go through a process that will help them as they do the 180-day plans. And if you want to go to it, sorry, I don't have references on my stuff, but the third page in your packet shows what a Freyer model is. And one of the things that we found is teachers are doing their 180-day plans. Every teacher that I've talked to that has done 180-day plans says this has helped me. Even myself, teacher for 15 years, going through 180-day plan helped me. And then when I found this, it helped me more. Because as you get that standard and you list your standard in your 180-day plan, sometimes the standards are kind of ambiguous and they're not very clear. And we found that when we were doing the math curriculum, Grace had her teachers drill down, when we were choosing that, she had them drill down to the very specific concept, because some of the lists we were getting, the average person couldn't look at that and say, this is what the kids can learn. And so when we selected that math textbook, the teachers had to drill down to the very specific concept and say that, yes, this is what we will be learning, but this is called a Freyer model, and this is what we trained our teachers on, that helps every teacher be able to take any standard and break it into smaller pieces and give it clarity in a way that anybody should be able to understand it. So myself or Suzanne or anybody in the building. So I wanted to just mention that process briefly. If you have any questions on it, I can talk about it later, but I had teachers that stayed for several hours after that training was over with excitement and talking about how they want to implement it in lots of different ways. And so as far as our curriculum preparation process for next year, any time that we can give the teachers to do the to put their standards into this type of a model will then make their 180 plans that much more quality. We also have had two staff trainings on the STEM designation, so our board voted to go ahead on that. And to kick off the process, and I went and reviewed other schools who applied through it, for it this year, and that was really nice and helpful, and I've organized our process to be very efficient and to make so that we can get the best score possible, pretty much. With our study skills, we have been getting better, even though they still lack sometimes in some of the application, but in order to, from what I've seen in far as our teachers buying in a little bit more on those, and some of them the kids are doing, they're not doing all of them. We actually have created study skill standards that are specific for Vanguard, which include taking core mental notes in every class, even if the teacher doesn't require it, has been the challenging part to get the kids reading a chapter before class. Some of those skills that are research-based, we've been trying to get those implemented, and we have made some progress this year, although when we look at our school-wide results, there's a lot of work that needs to be done there. We did create a study skills performance assessment, which is basically a test of all the study skills that are in the standards. And what we did at the beginning of this year was meet with every teacher together to decide the wording of that, so that it wasn't something that was given to them and said, here, do this, or this is a rule set on you by someone else. Every teacher helped make the wording on that. And then every month, the kids are tested on that, so that we can get results school-wide. And just having an assessment in place, like we've talked about already with accountability, has really opened everybody's eyes, because sometimes a kid will, and any time anybody has said this to me, it's not been true, they'll be like, well, what if I have a kid that's got a 4.0 and they failed the study skills performance assessment? And so I always open up my computer and I look at the kid, I'm like, what kid was that? So this one with a 2.5 GPA? You know, and they never are doing all of them. They never are getting straight A's and not doing the study skills. And so it's been a really big push, and we're still pushing really hard, and we have a lot of work to do on getting more buy-in from our teachers and making sure they're using all the classes, and then more buy-in from the kids. But the progress that we have made with getting the assessment in place and being able to view that data has been beneficial, and we're just going to keep pushing until we have a culture where every kid does that. Just on their own.
Does that?
So, one of the things we have the biggest problem with is getting third party testing data mm-hmm. for our curriculums, because it's becoming a real issue in our governance committee. We can't get it done. Does this process help us to get some of that data, or know where to get that data?
It does. It's not completely third party, but one of the pieces that was implemented recently was to have the teachers switch classes and assess someone else's class. And so, Concept Mastery. So, the study skills performance assessment is just measuring your study skills.
Okay, but then on this packet, when you select curriculum, how are you going to create Concept Mastery?
So, we do that through the work for assessment. Yeah. We've got a state. There's a couple of ways. Anything that's age tested, we have that, but right now, there's not an official third-party assessment place, and it does have to be third-party. It can't be something that, like, someone here creates, or else it's not true. But one of the ideas that's been brought up is that when we enter our kids into the competitions, then that's, in essence, a third-party. So we have, I'm going to cover it in just a minute, but the details of it, but when we send our kids, for example, like our debate team goes to the debate competition and they lose every debate, then our curriculum wasn't affected.
That's a very small sample.
Both the debate class only has 8 kids, but there's other classes, like our computer science ones, our computer science kids, and it's not going to test every kid because we can only send 3 teams, but our Skills USA competition. And so one thing that's been mentioned, because with our SAGE teachers, you know, can we pay them extra or whatever if their kids score high? What if you're not a SAGE teacher? Can you enter a competition like one that Josh did with the Utah History Day? If you enter your kids into a competition and they do well, then you can know. And it won't measure every kid in the class. I think if you want to do something like that, so the answer to your question is no. our process for selecting curriculum doesn't have an error component to select the assessment to assess that. The third party assessment to assess.
Well, one thing it does do is when you're selecting the curriculum, you're comparing it to state board, and you're making sure that it matches state board.
You are, but how am I going to get the data to know if the curriculum's working?
That's the problem.
Yeah. So that
needs to be a big piece of that. I can talk to Marie about how to add that in. But I wonder if that's more an assessment piece than when we're selecting it. But I know it's been beneficial in some ways to have assessment separate but working together so that we're not assessing our own curriculum. But.
Yeah. And I would agree, but when we look at the academic / assessment committee report, they're intertwined. And so, yeah, it's not the same thing because we do want the third-party assessment to make sure that the implementation is happening. But it really should be a consideration when we're looking at curriculum is what assessment pieces are available or what assessment pieces will align with that so that we can see other than the state SAGE assessment, because not every subject is assessed that way. So I would agree it should be part of that process.
Right now we're flying somewhat blind.
Mm-hmm. So just so everyone's aware, what this path is completed by the teacher. So we're going to be asking the teachers to find ways to evaluate their own curriculum. Is that their intent, or should it be?
As long as it's independent of the teacher.
Okay. I will add that in for next year's, which hasn't been published yet, because I want to wait and see how much time we can get to give the teachers. At the end of the year, I've requested 2 days in our shared sheet that the teachers would be given time to complete the Freyer model so that they can create better 180-day plans. Now I'll try to hurry and finish.
Can I ask a quick question on the study skills? I was talking to some of the teachers about the study skills, and I understand that you've been implementing this in the leadership, in the curriculum packet. Does it address how and what study skills are implemented within the classroom?
Yep, it does, and it did at the beginning of the year when everybody got it, too. They actually got it last week. And I walked through and trained every teacher. It has in there our Vanguard study skills, and it was made very clear to every teacher of every course that you are supposed to be teaching those study skills in your regular courses. And that's something we evaluate. So one of the things with evaluations, this is one of the things I've run into, and I've talked to Suzanne about it a little bit, because I have had a challenging teaching schedule that's my fault, because I like to sign up for a lot of things, and so I started out this year with a lot of classes. So I had 4 history classes, I had a debate class, a leadership, and a lead, and then my classes were like all over the school because we don't have enough classrooms. So I was teaching quite a bit, and I reached out to Suzanne and Kathleen, and I just like, hey, I kind of running literally from class to class with a big cart of computers, and it wasn't being very effective at teaching, and so I asked if I could get some help with just my leadership class at that time. And so I was given Ruthie Johnson for about 3 weeks before she had her baby. And as soon as I had Ruthie there, this was just during leadership, then I could walk around, and I went to every single leadership class every day. And I didn't walk in to every single leadership class, but I went to every leadership class. And that's one of the best ways to effectively find out if they're teaching it. You know, I kind of need to see it myself as the curriculum, and I do talk to Marie a lot, and she was really helpful at following through on some of those things, like if the teacher didn't have their 180-day plan, she put it in her list of things to follow up with, and that was helpful. But I need the time to follow up as well on the processes that I have asked the teachers to complete and that I've created. So doing that, and then Suzanne put in permanently for the rest of this year, so it helped with my leadership classes. It's been awesome, but I do need to be able to.
So some of the stuff too, if we just incorporate that and assign that out to somebody, and then Suzanne could decide, and you could do the follow-up if you couldn't do it or was doing other things.
Yeah, as long
just oversee or be part of, it just needs to happen.
Yeah, Yeah, it needs to happen. And then as soon as I was around, then teachers would stop me and say, hey, can you help me with something? And they would ask me questions and get help that they wouldn't have gotten if I was in my classroom teaching the class. So that is one of the, I think, one of the best ways to evaluate it. One of the first ways we did was to check and see if it was in the 180-day plan. But then fidelity to the 180-day plan is a different matter. So it does just need to be followed up on, and then I think it would happen a lot more. The competitions that we've entered our kids in this year, you've all heard about the National History Day competition, I think. Eight groups advanced to the state competition, so good job, Mr. Carver and his kids. Our Skills USA, we are sending three teams to compete for web design. That's the maximum number of teams that we can send, so really excited about that. That one's in next week. And then our debate team competed at a regional event, and they're signed up to compete at the state meet this month, and they had more wins than losses overall, and I mean, some of them did very well there. And one thing that we've started new this year is AP courses, and we have AP physics kids that have been taking the test this year, and then we wanted to add computer science, AP computer science for next year, and I filled the AP coordinator spot there as far as getting the required pieces that we need at the administrative level to have the courses. And then I myself have been attending several trainings this year, going to the curriculum directors meetings at the state office. STEM Academy has been really good, where we visited different STEM schools. We did schools to watch as an administrative team, which was helpful, and then we did the Getting Things Done. And we've submitted three grants so far, but haven't heard back on those yet, so I hope to report good ones on those. But I do have just some goals set up for next year. The biggest one is the study skills culture in every classroom and the students. That's got to be a way of life. And I think we just have to keep pushing until that is there. I want 100% of the 180-day plan completion and 100% of the curriculum preparation packet bonuses paid out for complete packets. I would like our PowerSchool pages to be 100% ready 1 week before school begins. And I have a plan on how to achieve that in my next sheet, which I'll turn through faster, sorry. And then I want to be able to complete my curriculum app with a lot of the new processes that we've created this year and turn that in for review. We want to achieve the STEM designation for the level of silver. And I want to increase participation in competitions. And we wanted to send kids to the science competition this year, the science fair, and that didn't happen because they were implementing the new curriculum. But it's also a curriculum goal to have 1 year of growth for every student in this age tested subject. It's only fair to make sure that the kids that are in our in our responsibility grow at least a year. And then we want to increase the AP course offerings. I did have some scheduling recommendations. This year's block schedule has had the least interference as far as implementing curriculum and not having kids missing classes because the schedule makes them late. That didn't happen this year, and it's been really nice and smooth because every class gets the same amount of time. And so there's kind of equity in making sure that every class has the ability to achieve their entire curriculum. And it really gives adequate time to every course to have the block schedule that we've had this year. I also recommend that one teacher teaches all the same course in a grade level. For example, if there's an 8th grade math course, one teacher should teach all 8th grade math classes so that kids aren't jumping between teachers in the middle of the year. And because the teachers have mentioned that they want to collaborate together, but they would rather, just for themselves in preparation and planning of their classes, they want to plan for fewer classes so they can plan better, but they want to collaborate on just each their own grade levels. I also want recommend for curriculum purposes that any teacher that teaches more than three different courses needs to have two preparation periods if they're going to prepare for four or more courses. And then on our school information system, so our SIS system, this year we bought PowerSchool, and I think that's one of the best things that's happened to us. We did have a learning curve as there was some implementation with that and training for our teachers and just glitches on PowerSchool's end for what happened with our training. But it was brought up in my curriculum director's meeting this week, or last week, I think it was. There are some schools do PowerSchool and Canvas, because Canvas is now free. And so a lot of people are like, okay, should we go to Canvas? But Canvas isn't an all-in-one. Canvas doesn't have your student information system and your learning management system. So if we drop, and I think our LMS, if I'm right, someone told me that our LMS portion of PowerSchool costs about $3,000 a year to keep them meshed together into one piece. So a parent can go to their app on their phone and see both the grades and any of the class pages and assignments or the internet. But if we move to Canvas, now there's going to be two separate places where kids and parents have to go to find stuff about school. One place for their grades, one place for their course assignments. But if we keep that all in one management system, and with the updates that PowerSchool has been putting out that are amazing, then kids can turn in an assignment on the learning management system and it automatically populates the SIS. What I don't want to have happen is for my teachers to be required to use Canvas, and now when a kid turns an assignment in on Canvas, they have to download the data and then drop it into PowerSchool. With how many assignments, if that's going to have a lag, that's what other schools have said. There's always a lag, and Canvas shows something different than PowerSchool or their whatever SIS they're using, because the teacher has to import it. And I don't want the kids to have to go to two separate places to log in. And I know our college kids already go to Canvas to log in, but they have two different Canvases. And so if the college kid already has two different Canvases for Slick and Snow, and then they have PowerSchool, if we do a third Canvas, now that kid has four places to go instead of three. So that's my recommendation on our school information system. I would not move to Canvas. The cost of keeping PowerSchool as our learning management system is very minimal if you compare it to the amount of time and effort that teachers are going to put in to jump data in both places. And I think it's just better for parents and students to log into one place. And then the last thing, I'll hurry really fast, sorry, I know it's been longer, but I won't be here next time to talk to you, but our curriculum preparation packet bonus, I had some recommendations on making that a little bit different for next year. I do think the standards should rise each year. I did get a lot of good work in this year and a lot of good effort from the teachers, but I wanted to break it apart into separate pieces. So there's some quotes at the top you can read later, but they came from the training at the Washington County School District. Basically, we owe it to the kids. It's a moral responsibility for us to make sure our kids get a good education here, and that there's a guaranteed and viable curriculum to every kid, every single kid. So the purposes of this bonus, I want to implement a guaranteed and viable curriculum for every kid here, and I want to communicate expectations clearly to students and parents through PowerSchool class pages. So my plan proposal is that the bonus is split out into four pieces and actually increased because it's asking for more work. And so I would assign $200 to an 180-day plan that's complete, and I have listed what complete is. $200 if the PowerSchool class page is created and has the course disclosure and syllabus posted along with every assignment that's listed on the 180-day plan. That was a request that the curriculum committee had last year that wasn't achieved for any class, that all assignments are created and posted. $200 to have your grade book have every assignment and quiz, a test, any graded item posted before the semester starts so that parents can see everything ahead. And then $200 if the teacher has unpacked every standard according to the Frager model. And it does end up being $800 per course, but the intent with this is our teachers don't have time to do this during the school year because they're teaching. They're with the kids, and I don't want a teacher giving the kids a worksheet so they can work on a 180-day plan. But if they're taking their summer time to do it, which are unpaid days, I know the salary is stretched out, but the salary is paid for days they already worked. If this intent is that they do this in June and July, then that's their pay. And the pay comes not just by putting in the time, it's by the product, and is the product complete. And I wanted to have 2 to 3 scheduled weeks during the summer where the building can be open, because some teachers have said, I really can't get work done at home. I want to come in. I want to have days where I can just come in and be at work and get paid for those days. And I don't want to pay somebody just to come and sit in a chair. I want a result over the summer. So I just wanted to quickly point out the results for our curriculum preparation process. Last year was the first year that we asked, that we gave everybody. And 2016-2017 was the issue. First time we issued it, I had 51% completion of 180-day plans, and only 15% of the bonuses were earned by getting everything done. But this last school year, we had 80% completion of 180-day plans, and 36% completion of the entire packet and bonus earned. And And I'm not super proud of those numbers because they're not where I would like them to be, but there is a lot of growth in the process, and so I think we can have faith and trust that the process is getting better, is working. And according to this, what this shows me is that there is a lot more buy-in and understanding from the teachers on how to complete it. So I apologize. I was trying to keep it in 5 minutes, but I hope that was all valuable information.
Any questions?
Okay. So, we're getting close to the end of the year, and maybe I'll keep the top one. So I've just compiled some predictive data based on what we've done with benchmarks and what teachers have gathered data in their classrooms, and just compiled that here. So the first sheet shows English, and the colored bands are so that you can follow the same kids. So 6th grade at the top is pink, and then as you go across to where it says teacher prediction, that's now this year's 7th graders, but they're the same kids. So you can see in language arts, that group of kids were 6% of them were proficient last year. Right now, the teacher predicts that they will be 23%. I did talk to her today, and she says it's possible that she hasn't updated her information there. When I evaluated the benchmarks that she's given, it looks like it's going to be closer to 51% will be proficient. So she's going to look at that and see if she...
The benchmark is actually what we're testing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the data they're coming back from.
Yep. Yep. The benchmarks are in the SAGE system, and they are... pretty much identical questions. I mean, they're very, very similar. So it's really good predictive information.
So if that's accurate, then we'll go from 35 to 51.
Yep. So if you look at the teacher grade level, last year's 7th grade was 35. This year's is predicting to be closer to 50, 51.
How come the teacher prediction is so low?
I talked to her about that today, and she said she might not have everything. She might not have updated it and
so
needs to put more in.
That's coming from her assignments, or?
Part of it is for assignments and tests, and part of it is the SAGE benchmarks.
Yeah, explain again what benchmarks.
And actually,
where they get this number.
And I can answer both of those. So benchmarks are practice tests that SAGE has, that the state created using the SAGE system. So it's really good practice for the kids to use the tools and the same type of questions. They are grouped by, so like in math, then you'll have one benchmark that is just on functions. So then that teacher can use those benchmarks to say, oh, okay, so these kids are here in this grouping of standards, and then they can look at them and see what they need to do to reteach them. They're set up really well to where the teachers can click on the question, and they can see, so you can see which kids got it right and wrong, you can see which answer each kid. So you can see, oh, okay, so they got this, which means they're probably missing this little concept. And within each group of standards, then there are a variety of different ways that they're going to be presented. And so you can see which kids are struggling with which presentation even. And most of our teachers are using lead intervention to reteach based on the benchmarks. So
taking the numbers out of practice tests for the...
The benchmark percentage? Mm-hmm. So if you look at the benchmarks given, then you can see 7th grade, for example, has given 5 of the 6. So they have 6 different categories that have a benchmark, and then there's at least an A and a B.
What day is they going to be the actual benchmarks when the actual SAGE? What end of the year? Final?
You mean the final end of year?
Yeah.
That... We'll do science the first week of May, English is the next week, and math is the week after. So right now, science has 4 teaching weeks left, English has 5, and math has 6. And then as far as the teacher prediction, it is just based on teachers, whatever information they wanted to use to say...
Is that so subjective?
Yep.
They say, so one of your teachers says we're going to have 13% proficiency.
So I did want to explain on that. The 13% and 45%, she's had some out-of-the-building issues and has not been able to update hers, so that's not accurate. But I will get you an updated number as soon as I can.
The 13 and 23 or 13?
The 13 and 45. Yeah.
The teacher actually says she's only going to have about 23%.
No, so what happened on that 13? The 23% then, yes. The 13%, two teachers share that grade level. And so we have, I don't remember, 8th grade, 90-ish students. And so if one teacher said, here's my list of predicted kids, and the other teacher didn't submit any, then I have what I have.
So that makes sense.
So, yeah.
So they say, I think these kids are going to be proficient, and then whatever's on the list is what's left.
Yep. Yep, and some of our teachers have gone as deep as to say they have the data to show you what their predicted scale score is going to be. Not just that they're going to be proficient or not, but
so
really detailed.
The NAR 11th is, I'm assuming, because they don't take the test?
That teacher hasn't given any benchmarks. So he's given 0 out of 6, so I didn't have anything to get that from. And then the next page is math, and it's set up exactly the same, so you can follow the color bands to follow the kids. So you can see 6th grade math, or the students we have in 7th grade now. Last year, 22% of them were proficient. This year, it should be in the 60s. So that teacher's done really well.
So the only one you have to worry about is the
secondary math.
That would be really disappointing.
And that's what the benchmarks are showing.
That's what the benchmarks are showing, yeah.
It's 3 points lower than what they did last year. Is that correct?
Yeah, and those same kids were 79 last year.
Then we need to go to our other data and look and see.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So you're making note of that?
Yeah.
That's
pretty close.
Because that was one of the ones that showed up on our other list. Secondary math. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Look on that.
Is it too late?
Not entirely.
Still,
yeah.
As long as you're still breathing.
Yeah. They're still breathing. We can still teach them. And then science.
This is not available.
Good question. So on math, you'll notice secondary math 2 and secondary math 3 says not available on benchmarks, because when I pulled them up, then one of the benchmarks, 2 kids had taken it. One of them, 8 kids had taken it. And that's not enough data to be able to give a prediction for a grade level. When I spoke with the teachers, they kind of just have the kids, okay, do this one and then do this one. And so some kids are faster than others at finishing them, but they are working on getting them done. And they have a plan for completing those. Anything else?
Yeah, this is our last chance before.
Mm-hmm. Yep, so anything you want me to change or anything you want me to do, I need to know now. We'll do. And then science, the 7th and 8th grade, they don't have benchmarks available. They do have practice tests, and I've talked with the teachers about those. The purpose of the practice tests is to give the kids a chance to use the tools. They don't give any data. However, there is a score at the end. So it will say on module 1 or cluster 1, there were 9 points possible and you got 2, but it won't say which ones you got right and wrong. And once that kid X's out of the practice test, the scoring and everything is gone. So the teachers are going to, as they give those practice tests, they're going to have the kids show them the scores so that they can at least see where they are. Because they will know on that cluster how they've done, they just won't know by individual question. So they will have something, but nothing near what they'll have in the future and what they had in the past when there were benchmarks. There was no benchmarks this year just because of the change in the state standards. They just didn't create them yet.
So is this 72%?
So on the bottom there are college physics 1010 ended mid-year, and so they took the summative, and 72% of those college kids were proficient.
And that compares to 38 for the state? Or is that
last year, yep, last year the state was 38%.
In physics?
Mm-hmm.
So they count that towards that figure? Is that the same?
Mm-hmm.
So that...
It'll count, but that's only...
That's
39%
of our kids.
Students, yeah.
Yeah, and that's our, the college level ones.
Right.
So
but we still have the AP physics running, so we're hoping that
yeah.
that generates some higher scores as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you can they do and have given some benchmarks, not many yet, but yeah.
Okay.
Anything else?
You have this data just once a year. You're doing this all throughout the year.
So the benchmarks are kind of interesting because it doesn't really it this each subject level is a little bit different as far as when is the best time to implement those and start giving them. The way the math is taught, then it makes more sense to start giving them February, March-ish. Science could probably start a little bit earlier because they're taught more in concepts and then you move on. Whereas math, they kind of teach it and then they teach it and then they teach it. And so math and English make a little more sense to not start the benchmarks until later in the year. And you could. There would be nothing wrong with that. But teachers haven't typically used them before then. Sorry. The only other thing I have, and I got an email today with our ACT results. I have not had a chance to evaluate it much at all other than the state looks for an 18 composite or higher. Of the students that took it, 53% of them were 18 composite or higher. We did have 8 students take it on a makeup day.
That didn't get counted?
They're not counted yet.
So how is that compared to the state?
We won't know the evaluative data until June.
How is that compared to last year?
And that, like I said, I got the email today. I haven't been able to evaluate it much at all, but I will.
What was the percent again?
53. What's that?
That's 11th graders.
Yep, that's our 11th grade. And that is going to be our 11th grade from the
mm-hmm.
state. That's what they'll use for our 11th grade students. Our 11th grade students, so we decided earlier this year that juniors would take ACT and SAGE. The SAGE is for our benefit data. The state won't look at that. They'll use this ACT.
All those 11th graders, have they been here? Is this their third year here?
I haven't looked at that.
Not all of them, and others at least.
Would imagine the majority, but not all. But I don't look that up.
What were last year's numbers? State numbers?
Maybe I'll look that up while the next person's going.
It's a little low, huh? How is that?
I thought it was going to be higher. I was hoping.
Do we have the teachers teaching ACT prep within their subjects, like English and math? I thought that was something we were going to do if that happened.
They were teaching ACT content, I'm not sure.
Or some practice tests.
But
I thought that was something that could happen. I don't know if it did. So
that was
an
ACT prep class today?
Well,
I don't think it did much in the classes, and that would be, I don't know, kind of a time constraint and difficult, but...
I don't have time to do a practice ACT.
But it would take a one period of time to do it.
Very frequently. I mean...
Well, just to make sure that they get some practice in there.
Yeah.
It's either that or nothing for some of these
kids.
We
could improve our ACT prep course, because I happen to share a classroom with half the teachers that taught that. It really depended on the teacher in the room. So Lexi, that's it. If we're going to invest in a teacher and the training for that teacher to do the course. Some teachers, when I walked in, the kids were always busy and they were working in the ACT portal and stuff.
Yeah.
And the other ones...
We did have three different teachers teach that course, and the third teacher we had in there was pretty effective and very knowledgeable across all three subject content. The other two, I don't feel like we had prepared them for that course, and it wasn't successful. But I feel like the last change was helpful.
It seems like if that's going to be our 11th grade, our grade, then it seems like that would be equally as important, if not more, than the SAGE practice benchmarks. I have talked to some students of other schools, and they actually do ACT practice within their classroom.
I agree.
You know, maybe it's a Friday thing or whatever. But
and it does make more sense because you've got the experts in the field in front of the classroom that could help them through that process. You know, and I there's a lot to be said about getting onto the platform, similar to what we do with our SAGE kids. We want them to get on so that they see the platform, they see the same kind of screen, the same tools, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But having that master teacher in there to help guide them through the process would be helpful, too.
So if that's a requirement, then I can add it into 180 upon school-issued information because we've already put in there. And if that's one thing that we do, if we want something in 180 upon, it has to be added into the list of requirements so the teacher can check off as they're making that. So there'd be the 11th grade teachers, right? So if that's something you want, then I can add it into the curriculum preparation packet.
Is 11th grade too late to start? When did you start it in 10?
As far as the actual practice tests, maybe not. I think 11th grade, if you're talking the practice test, I think doing it throughout 11th grade, and we probably just needed to follow up with those teachers better and make sure that they were using Schmoop and the practice tools that they had available. I know some of them, I know all of them did it some. I don't know to what level. But I know they did, it did happen, but probably not like it needed to.
Give them that extra time in an ACT prep course in addition to whatever you're doing in your math class should be helpful if it was.
And I looked at the Utah scores, and they don't do it as a percentage. So it'll just say, like, the average composite was 20.3 last year. Yeah. So they don't say, what percent of students were 18 or higher. But it said the average was 20.2. So and I can figure our average well on the next kind of one. Okay.
Yeah, so the thing going on right now in the current enrollment, we just had Snow College class. Students are starting to add sign up for Snow College classes. Friday, right before it's time to go, then we got an email from Snow College saying that the enrollment or registration for college classes were going to be different this year based on, we had had a little bit of a push. Snow College doesn't want the 10th graders signing up for classes if they're not prepared for it. There's been a little bit of concern that some of our students are starting, you know, they say, okay, only 10th graders because they feel like that they're not old enough or they're not mature enough for the college classes. And then we have students that are skipping grades and going from 9th to 10th grade or skipping maybe in the 5th, 6th skip. And so then they're coming to us not just as 10th graders, but actually at the age level as a 9th grader. And so then we have students coming into the college classes unprepared. Because of that, Snow College has kind of put a push on some of our students signing up. And we have had the registration open up, but they've blocked all of our students from registering on Sunday night and asked us to send out the request for our students and tell them these are the ones that we want. And so we've got to get signatures from all of the students. And we are also, so we're working on that. And then, meeting with each student to make sure that they're getting the classes they need. Salt Lake Community College enrollment should be open, is opening up on the 10th through the 12th, and that schedule should be available tomorrow from when I talk to Salt Lake Community College. But we're right in the middle of it, so I don't really have a lot of data for you on that yet.
Were younger students performing at a lower level than the average other students, or is there?
I don't know if I haven't looked at the age comparison. That's probably a good thing to that we probably ought to look at. But I know that there has been some concerns, mainly the maturity. They don't have the background knowledge for even discussions and things. I met her in the our Art 1010 class. We had students that, you know, they were looking, we looked at their an essay that they had to write, and they did a rough draft, and they had to get ready to do the final draft, and the teacher of the class asked me to come in and give the students a little bit of support on Friday, and I went in there, and I realized the students' first step, they didn't even understand the question, to how to write it, you know, they had to write an essay, and I started, went in there with the idea of how to write a five-paragraph essay, and some of the basic ideas of writing essays, and I realized that the first step was teaching them how to read a question. And so I could see that even, you know, a lot of the kids in that class are the 10th graders, but they, in my, from my experience and what I see, is they are coming in a college class not prepared for a college class. And so we really need to beef it up and make sure that, that we have that support before they enter the college classes.
Or language arts classes teach those things?
Well, they teach essays, and when I asked the kids, like, the idea of a five-paragraph essay, they understood that, but somewhere there's the, I don't know if it's the study skills or what it is that we need to help them with exactly, but even the idea of here's a question, what is it asking? And that's what I saw was the kids, they needed a little bit more guidance and support of making sure they understood even how to answer a question. Not even the idea of the five-paragraph essay. So, anyway, my proposal that we kind of were working with Snow College, but they are kind of almost forcing us to make sure our kids are ready before they start entering the college classes.
So the change in process to sign up to that, does that mean we get second choice?
Yeah, 10th graders can't even sign up for another month.
Another people?
Yeah,
other schools are signing up for them now?
Well, the other schools only have about five. In fact, they said that we have 50-something 10th graders, and they have all the other schools together have five. They decided to open it up to the 11th and 12th graders first,
mm-hmm.
but because they can't block 10th graders, their system isn't set up that way because, well, we're pretty much the only ones that have that,
mm-hmm.
and they have blocked all of our students and said, send in forms,
mm-hmm.
and even at that, you know, we send out several messages and emails and phone calls and text alerts to parents to get those forms in, and it's a really slow process to get those forms in.
So how do we prepare the students better so that they have that understanding before going to the classes?
They have to have the study skills.
Yeah, they have to have the study skills and
basic
and to be able to evaluate them before it's time to sign up for the
classes.
And make sure
sometimes
they
really it
already
really is just a matter of time and maturity too. And
yeah,
put a lot
I mean,
of 10th grade kids, and some of all these kids have skipped, so like 9th grade kids, they went into college classes. So long. It would be nice, like I was saying, I'd like to see the numbers to see how well the younger kids have been doing in the college classes. And you just have to, I mean, some kids I'm sure can do really well in their age, and others might speed away. But we do need to make sure our students are doing well. And so what Snow College sees is just a herd of overabundance of really young kids from Vanguard coming into the classes. And so I'm not sure what our track record has been with the younger kids with Snow.
It'll look
good. They need to be good. It needs to look good. And we need to make sure that they're performing well.
Have we prepared like a basic assessment that we can have them go through on writing and different skills to see if they're a 10th grader, they would have to go pass, do that, perform that, then you could evaluate them and say if they look like they're ready then.
We are putting something together, even an application process for concurrent enrollment. The other thing that I had proposed in looking at is as our students are signing up for physics and chemistry, because that's kind of where we've had a little bit of weakness and some of the other classes as well, is our students are starting, you know, they jump in at 10th grade trying to take a physics 1010. Well, technically a physics 1010, you should have a math background, you should have some of this background knowledge. Most schools will teach the physics class and then physics 1010, or a chemistry, high school chemistry class, and then chemistry 1010. Now, our students are jumping right into it without having that background knowledge, without that, you know, even in a communications class, having the experience in some of those areas.
We kind of watched it too, and watching the kids that the kids that aren't failing or are failing college classes, we're helping them, or we're catching them.
We're working on that.
We're catching them before they.
Yeah, as long as we have enough qualified staff in there to begin with, then we can keep up on that. And I have been working with the facilitators to make sure that we are watching that a lot closer.
Well, there were some 10th graders that got an A in their, or 9th graders that got an A in their college class first semester, because they were allowed to take it then. And then those were the kids that were blocked from taking the second semester. And they're like, but I got the A. And then there's other kids that kind of ruined the system for. So some of those younger kids did do very well.
And one of the other things that blocked it is we actually had Snow College says, well, we don't want any kids at this age. You know, we don't want any 9th graders in this class. And then some requests were submitted to Snow College with them at that grade, even though they had told us we don't want it at this grade. And so they says, well, it looks like Vanguard isn't capable of following our request, so we're just going to lock it and not allow it. And so now they're going to require them to come in and meet with every 10th grader before our 10th graders can sign up. And so as long as we keep trying to get closer and closer to that line and that fence and not follow the things that they asked of us, then they're just going to keep fighting back harder. So I think we just, you know, we need to use good judgment on that, making sure that our kids really are ready. If Snow College makes a request that this is what they want, that we can meet that request and work with them as well, much as possible.
So I did figure that out when we were 18.4. So the state last year was 20.3. We won't know what the state was this year until June. When we were 18.4, we still have 8 more students. Scores to come in.
The average for the state was
20.3.
How many kids took it last year?
I don't know. I'd need to pull that up because when we did it, we had 10th and 11th, and then it wasn't until later that we had just the 11th grade data alone, and I don't remember.
That was 20.3 for Vanguard students. Mm-hmm.
The state average.
So we were 2 points below.
Last year we were closer to what the state average was, but that included our 10th graders that were in the higher math. Yeah.
What was your ACT last year?
I don't remember. Once we had just the juniors, I am not sure.
I think
it was about the same. Once we had just the juniors, then it was about the same.
Yeah, we were below. But I'm not sure if this, we were low, I don't think we were lower than this.
It was close.
But it was probably
to the
close.
Same.
So we need to work on that.
What happens when a 10th grader takes the ACT? Is it just not calculated, right?
So they don't. They don't let you do that.
it's only the individuals.
Yeah, it's just for juniors. This sophomores can take it at other schools and pay, but as far as what we can administer, it's just to juniors.
So it doesn't go on our grade for Vanguard's grade.
Right. Yeah.
Didn't see the first ticket.
Not here. The state paid for a contract with ACT for the juniors because that's their required test, that their accountability test. So they just have juniors do it that week. We even asked if we can we have our other grade level students take it here if they pay for it, and they said no. That day and that situation is just for juniors. So the others have to line it up at a different location.
Okay, we're a little bit time. should we ready to move in to the next item? We have Exhibit A.
And I don't think we'll take too much time. We just have it up for discussion. But Exhibit A, I emailed out to you for last month's board meeting. It is, in essence, the short form of the charter. And so I sent you my recommended Exhibit A based upon feedback that I've gotten from Rebecca at the state, Rebecca Cisneros. So I'll just ask you to just kind of look at that. If you don't still have it and need it, I'm happy to give it to you again. It just requires board approval so we can send it up to the state charter board. They would then take what we are recommending and they would either approve or send it back for a revision. So it's just to kind of take us away from the big honking document that is our charter and takes it down to a couple of pages. So I'll just ask you to review that. I'm not going to take your time tonight to go over that. And then the second thing on here for review, we already had a calendar to you for approval, and it's been approved by the board. There are some things that have come up, particularly with the college, trying to maybe more closely align our schedule with the college classes. And so I made a few adjustments on the previously approved calendar. They're on here, and the adjustments that I made are listed on the first page. I emailed this to you as well. It's in an Excel document, and I've got, let me go ahead and pass those down and have you look through that. Thank you. So the top page just indicates some recommended changes, and so I would just be asking you to look at them and determine if you wanted to accept those or if you have other items that would be up for review. Second part, that we're too late to do that for next year, but possibly in consideration for the following year, is that we request a waiver of the 180-day requirement. And so because our school days are longer than the typical, if we have fewer than 180 days but still meet the 990-hour requirement, and if our primary purpose for doing that is to better align our schedule with our college schedule because we have such a high percentage of our kids taking college classes, that's something we could consider for the 2019-20 year.
Does that affect funding if we're not on that?
It won't if they grant us the waiver, because we would still be meeting that 990-hour requirement, which means our kids would still be getting the instruction time that they would need. So that's, like I say, a few changes on there. I also included a proposed bell schedule in talking with the governance committee and talking with others, some of the teachers as well. There's been a concern expressed regarding our students taking release time in the middle of the day. So this proposal would start Vanguard classes at 9:10, allowing there to be time for their release time if they so choose to have it at 8:20. Take care of that. We would start our classes at 9:10. It would then take our school day to 4:10, 4:15, which would be a half hour later. So we'd start a half hour later and a half hour later. And then my second part of the proposal would be that we would have a modified block schedule so that, and I should have written this on there, but maybe you could write it on there, what that would do, because we'd have 5 periods a day for a total of 10 periods,
then three of those subjects, my recommendation is those three subjects, and that's the SAGE subjects, would be taught every day. And so, for instance, a student might have for first period math, second period science, third period English, and then fourth and fifth period would be those other four courses, giving you seven classes, which is what they currently have. And the other classes would have 65 minutes every other day, and that would be your elective courses, CTE courses, history courses. Those courses would be 65 minutes every other day. There has been, it's been suggested that maybe that longer class period is too long, particularly for our junior high kids. Our college classes run 75 minutes. Our high school classes are running 85. And our students, many of them are very young, and those who are older, a lot of them are taking the college classes, so their class period length is actually lower or less than what our 7th grade, 8th grade, 9th grade kids are sitting in. So it's my recommendation that we do move to a modified block with the three SAGE-tested subjects or the state-tested subjects offered every day, allowing that consistency for those subjects to be taught every day, so we don't have a kid taking a class on a Wednesday and not having that class again until the following Monday kind of thing. And so just, again, up for consideration on that. And then the calendar, again, is just the physical calendar that kind of shows you the different dates. And I did a little bit of crossing out, and the purple is kind of the big recommended changes. Oh, another big thing to comment, the state will not acknowledge a 7th grade only day as a student contact day, part of the 180 days. So having the 7th grade students start on that first day doesn't count in the 180 days. So my recommendation is that night that we would do back to school night, because it's kind of all been a discussion a couple of times, what do we do on back to school night? What's the purpose? How do we handle that? My thoughts are we would have an hour or two where the 7th graders would come for their orientation, they'd get a brief orientation, and then run their class schedules, 8A class schedule, go in, meet their teacher, get the syllabus, find out where the classroom is, and then move to the next class and move that way around and take whatever time would be sufficient, whether that's an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours, to make sure that they get a chance to tour this building through going to their classes, finding out where they are without all the big kids in the hallway with them. So that's kind of my suggestion, is that back to school night becomes a 7th grade orientation. And then we start Monday and Tuesday. There are no college classes yet. As long as we are meeting for a minimum of 4 hours in any given day, the state acknowledges that as a student contact day. So long full week, I figured that we would put concurrent enrollment orientation that Monday and Tuesday, have that be an early release, probably 12:30, because it's a little bit of a better time frame to release students at lunchtime. They would have the other days, and then we would hit the ground running with a full day when the college classes start on that Wednesday. So, and then you might notice also recommendation to put all those professional development days and teacher work days to the end of the year to better align with college classes, which would mean the last day of school would be the 17th of May, which is 2 weeks past the college classes.
How far do we go now?
Sorry, what?
How far do we go now?
We go to the end of May, or 24th. Anyway, it backs this up about a week. The 24th was our intended ending date on the approved calendar.
I think that's our ending this year, right? 24th?
Yeah. Yeah, and it would have been the 24th again next year. Oh, one more big, sorry, there are some big things in here. But another thing, we just got finished with spring break, and it is messy. I have to come and open the building so the kids who choose to go to the college classes. I talked to my kid in the science or the biology class because I made sure he came. He said kids were still trying to figure out how to access the videos from the class. The quizzes are due on Wednesday, tomorrow. It's not a good thing. And then when Snow and Slick had spring break, of course they had it different weeks last this year, then our kids in college classes didn't know where to go, or should I go here, and especially if it was a Slick class, what do I do if I usually go off campus and go to Slick? So, you know, go to study hall, but accountability was a little weird. So I, you know, there it was suggested, and my knee-jerk reaction was, no, we've always had spring break in later in the year or, you know, over the weekend kind of thing. But honestly, I think it just makes absolute sense. And next year, Slick and Snow actually have the same spring break, which is really nice. It's also the same as the University of Utah. And so in aligning for our families, I think it makes sense. So that's my other big, huge recommendation.
Sounds smart.
Is that we align our spring break that week that the colleges are in on spring break. So I don't expect to throw all this information at you and say, what do you think, guys? So just digest it. Maybe at the next board meeting we can put that up. And I will process this more because it is not a final product. It is just some of the bits and pieces that I feel like we need to adjust. And then I still have to go through and do the calculation, make sure we still have the 180 days, make sure we still are getting our 990 hours, and I will put those calculations with it and put it out. I don't anticipate that my amendment or that anything beyond this would be dramatically different than what is on here. So if I can get that out to you just within the next couple of weeks, so you have a couple of weeks to review in detail and look at what I'm proposing, and then make any review points in that time so that we can come on the next board meeting and approve the amended calendar. And the same with the Exhibit A. If you can review that, give me feedback. Even if it looks good, send it through. Then we'll put it up for vote next month, if that's okay.
Okay. Seems the agenda. Motion to close.
Motion to close.
Second.
All in favor of closing the board meeting, say yes. Opposed, say no. Okay, we're going to close.